If you have listened to this program for a while, you probably know that I am a kind of a Civil War buff, and it's always a treat when a wonderful new book is available. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're going to start our show today by talking about a book. It's called This Wicked Rebellion, Wisconsin Civil War Soldiers Write Home. And we're talking with the Michael Edmonds. The book is edited by John Zim, but the foreword comes from Michael Edmonds, and he also is associated with the Wisconsin Historical Society. So we're going to learn about the incredible collections available at the Wisconsin Historical Society and online. He heads the digital collections and web services in the Libraries Archives Division of the Wisconsin Historical Society. He's written and edited several books. And he's been involved with the most recent, of course, This Wicked Rebellion, Wisconsin Civil War Soldiers Write Home. Are you a Civil War buff? What is it about that period that fascinates you? How aware are you of the role Wisconsin soldiers played in the war? I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post questions or comments there, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And Michael Edmonds, pleasure. Thanks for coming by to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Sure. Glad to be here, Larry.
Some folks might be surprised to know that there are so many Wisconsin soldiers fought in the Civil War, but there were a lot of them.
More than 90,000 participated, and of course the war touched every family somehow.
Yeah, and obviously many of them perished. Many of those soldiers perished.
Yeah, around 12,000, more than 12,000. Yeah. Only about a third of those, though, were from combat. The real threat, of course, was disease because medical care was so primitive and they were out in the field. So twice as many Wisconsin soldiers died from disease as from suffering injuries or wounds or being killed in combat.
Yeah. Well, the book, which I really enjoyed reading, This Wicked Rebellion, Wisconsin Civil War Soldiers Write Home, is made up of firsthand accounts that really bring history, really bring it to life for me, to read these letters. Where did the letters come from, and how did they come to the Wisconsin Historical Society?
Yeah, there's a great story there. The letters were collected by a guy named Edwin B. Quiner, who lived here in Madison. He had grown up in Connecticut, was apprenticed as a journalist, and when he came to Wisconsin as a young man, he started a newspaper in Watertown. But he was one of those upstart Republicans in the 1850s, and most of his readers were not, and so he eventually lost that paper and moved to Madison. When the war broke out, he was working as a personal assistant to the governor, and he decided that he would write a history of the war when it was over. So he was thinking of the future. And he subscribed, probably with the governor's money, to every newspaper that was published in Wisconsin and clipped out of them letters that were printed from the front. It was pretty common for groups of men in a small town to enlist together, and so when one of them wrote home, their family would get together, read the letter out loud with friends, maybe circulate it, and then run down to the newspaper office and have it printed. So Quiner and his teenage daughters were clipping these out and pasting them in scrapbooks during the course of the war. They filled 11 volumes of scrapbooks, more than 10,000 letters altogether, and they're all set in newspaper type. When the war was over, he did write that book, and then he gave the letters to the Historical Society in 1867.
It's a great story. And, of course, not all those letters are included in This Wicked Rebellion, but there are some wonderful letters. And John Zim was the editor and did a fine job.
Yeah, I think John got the best 1 or 2%. You could probably do 3 or 4 books that were equally good, but there's a tremendous treasure trove of stories in these letters. And I should say all the letters are online. You can see all 10,000 and search them at wisconsinhistory.org/Civil War.
Yeah, I certainly want to talk about some more of that with you, but I want to get Nick in Green Bay online here. Nick, hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
This is an awesome show. I grew up in like an 1800s neighborhood, so this is really interesting to me. But my question is, we're so far north. How much of a role did we actually play in the Civil War?
The state of Wisconsin? Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, people in Wisconsin were eager to enlist when the first call came out for troops. Three times as many people volunteered as were needed, and they went south, were among the first troops to go south. And from the spring and summer of 61 right up through the end of the war, Wisconsin troops were involved in all the major battles you would have learned about in school. They fought in every theater. There were Wisconsin soldiers as far west as Texas and New Mexico, and as far east, of course, as Washington, D.C. So we don't associate Wisconsin with the Civil War because, of course, the battles weren't fought here. But tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents were in the South participating.
And it was interesting. Wisconsin, when we had regiments and so forth, were decimated. Unlike many states, if my memory is right on this, Wisconsin would actually replace and replenish those regiments with our own people.
That's right. That's right. That happened often. I don't know the history of the war in other states, but I know that Wisconsin was one of the most devoted and provided some of the fiercest troops.
Lynn in Lake Forest, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. And I'm reading not from a letter, but from a diary, daily diary, that my great-grandfather, whose name was Hiram Conry, and he came from Sun Prairie. He was mustered in at Camp Randall back in 1864, and he kept a day-by-day log talking about the weather, where they were. He was with Sherman's army, and he writes about, you know, Atlanta and so forth and coming up. But it's so every day. For example, on Monday, February 19th, he writes, "Laid over today, washed my clothes, mended, got well rested." You know? Oh, isn't that good? Anyway, but the one that really struck me was on March 2nd, "Laid over. Regiment went out 8 miles after forage. Got back to camp at 6. There was a rebel shot today as an offset for a man they killed belonging to the 21st Illinois." How'd you like to be that guy?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, thanks a lot for calling, Lynn. Comment, Michael?
The soldiers in the Civil War generally were much more literate than soldiers had been in any previous American war, certainly. And so letters and diaries abound. The head of the Historical Society, when the war broke out, printed up a flyer, which he distributed at Camp Randall and other training camps around the state, saying, "Please keep a diary and give it to us when you come back." And it could be that your ancestor there, Lynn, saw one of those flyers and was inspired to do that. We ended up with more than 100, between 150 and 200 of those diaries like you were just reading from. And they're not all as rich and vivid as your excerpts that you were just reading from. Many of them are about the weather and how bad the food is. And one thing they convey is how boring it was. And then for 48 hours, you'd be risking your life and you'd be in the middle of hell. And then it'd be boring again.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. The guest we have today is Michael Edmonds, and he is has written the foreword to the book The Wicked Rebellion. The book was edited by John Zim. Michael worked with him and also wrote the foreword for the book. It's great to have him along. You can join in with your own questions or comments as we talk about The Wicked Rebellion, these letters to home from our soldiers during the Civil War. The number 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We would certainly love to hear from you any way you get a hold of us. Connie and Madison, your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I'm interested in knowing whether the letters that you've collected indicate the fervency of some of the abolitionist spirit, especially among Norwegian immigrants in Wisconsin. I'm aware that there was a significant church split, not over slavery, anti-slavery, but over the degree of fervency of the then bishop in the Norwegian synod on the issue of slavery. There was a group of church members who were even more fervently abolitionist and thought that the bishop was not as fervently abolitionist as he could be. I wonder if any of that spirit is articulated in the letters that are there.
That are in the book, at least, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are letters in the book, Connie, from the 15th Infantry, which was primarily Norwegian. I don't know if they touch on that issue. If they do, probably not in as much detail as you would like. A whole chapter of the book is selected letters about slavery and abolition. I didn't check before coming over to see how many might be from Norwegians or whether they went into that depth. But you could certainly do that in the digital collection online, because you could search by Norwegian or 15th Regiment and slavery and then pull up all the letters where that's being discussed.
This is absolutely, and thanks, Connie, for calling, by the way, because this is a great time, I think, to talk about this collection that's all up online for us.
Yeah, it's you know, technology has made possible all sorts of learning opportunities that were not there 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And we decided, at the suggestion of someone in Lodi, a local historian in Lodi, we decided with the 150th anniversary of the war coming, we would put up these letters that Quiner had collected so they could be searched online. And then as we were doing that and it was going smoothly, we said, heck, why don't we just put up everything?
Yeah.
And so we didn't put up literally everything, but every memoir, every history of a unit, most of the most important state records created by the adjutant general, more than 1,000 photographs taken during the war are all available. And we didn't just put them up and rely on the computer to index them. We actually had someone manually look at every page and say, well, this is about Norwegians or this is about slavery. So the searching is really quite effective.
It's absolutely amazing. And to get there, you go to what? What do you do to get there?
WisconsinHistory.org/Civil War.
Yeah, it's simple. WisconsinHistory.org/Civil War. And I think we have that up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well, Judith. Has it up, I'm sure. It is unbelievable. If you have a relative, I mean, let's say if you had a relative who was in the Civil War and may have written letters, would it be possible to put a relative name in there?
It is. We built on what Quiner did. He and his daughters actually copied out every name on every page. So there was an alphabetical index available for the 10,000 Quiner letters. So we built on that and created a personal name field. And genealogists can enter a family name or an individual's name and be led to pages where that person is mentioned.
Unbelievable. Barbara in Janesville, we'll get to you in just a minute, but I want to remind everybody we're talking today with Michael Edmonds, heads the Digital Collections and Web Services in the Library Archives Division of the Wisconsin Historical Society, and he has written the foreword to the book edited by John Zim titled This Wisconsin Rebellion, Wisconsin Civil War Soldiers Write Home. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kind of interesting to know that maple syrup played a role in the Civil War to some extent. We'll be talking about that a little later because our guest is Teresa Moroni coming up at 11:45 talking about modern maple syrup. Her book is Modern Maple. And so we'll be visiting with her. And I know there's a little piece there in the book about maple syrup and its use during the Civil War. So that's a little tickler for that show coming up in about 30 minutes or so, or 25. Right now, though, having a lot of fun talking with Michael Edmonds about the Wicked Rebellion, Union soldiers writing home, and not only soldiers, but there were some letters I remember. I'm thinking of letters from a nurse, for example, who wrote home to a wife. mm-hmm. about the death of the woman's husband. I wrote very eloquently.
Yeah. Every regiment was also furnished with a civilian advocate called the agent. And that agent was supposed to watch out for the soldiers' well-being, whether they had enough medical care and so forth. And they wrote some of these letters home. Some of the soldiers also had worked for newspapers. So there are occasional letters where they're writing back to their friend, the editor. And those are charming letters, too.
Yeah, and I think they're such good writers. I mean, they're a really literate bunch.
It's very true. It's kind of astonishing. And one of the questions that came up for John Zim when he was editing this Wicked Rebellion was, how much were the letters cleaned up? You know, if the letter was written in the field and then it went to, say, the Richland Center newspaper, did the editor improve the grammar or improve the style? And, of course, there's no way to answer that. But they read very, very well.
But as I read through them, there are different styles. They're all well read. But the writing style is different enough that there certainly wasn't a common editor across many of them, that's for sure. Barbara in Janesville, I know you've been waiting. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I always am interested when people are talking about the Civil War, and I always recommend a trip to Vicksburg, Mississippi. The national park there is amazing, and there are monuments to each state that was represented in that battle. I traveled there, it's been several years ago now, and the battlefield is intact left intact all these years as it would have been at the time of the battle. When I say that, I mean the little, for lack of a better word, the ruts that they dug to secure themselves in are still there. You can still see the rutted fields where the soldiers, you know, were down in to protect themselves. And of course, the battle took place on a bank over the Mississippi River. So they were down in the ruts with the opposition coming from the other side. But as I recall, there is a monument to Wisconsin participation in that battle. And it's definitely, to me, worth the trip for anybody who's interested in Civil War.
To see it, yeah.
To see it.
Yeah.
To see that battlefield and to see what types of conditions, you know, these people were fighting in.
You know, you'd be interested, Barbara and others, in the fact that in the book there are some letters that relate to to Vicksburg and the battle. A member of the 12th Wisconsin recounted for his sister in Madison the scene in Vicksburg after it surrendered to Grant's army, among others. And I think there was another letter or two in there in the book.
Yeah, you know, it's a common theme. There were thousands and thousands of soldiers there, and everybody followed it. It took several months, I think, for the siege to be effective. So it was in the daily news all that spring, and then finally falls, I think, on July 4th.
Yeah.
There was a book about Wisconsin at Vicksburg, Barbara, that was done at the time that monument you described was erected, and we added that book online as well.
Hmm. So
I'm a transplant. My people are from Iowa, and through genealogy, one of my distant cousins discovered that actually his great-grandfather was in Sherman's March to the Sea.
Yeah.
He has that part of history, but that's not Wisconsin-related. It's Iowa. The other thing I wanted to ask the caller, he's been mentioning this Mr. Quiner.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with the books of Laura Ingalls Wilder, her mother was Caroline Quiner, and she was from around Waukesha County. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that this would possibly be the same family.
Yes, we tracked that down. It's not mentioned in the book. It's on the website, and they're relatively distantly related.
Distantly.
It was not a close marriage, but yes, same class of people, same ethnic origin. You know, they mm-hmm. were Yankees who moved out here.
And Barbara, you're certainly going to want to go to the digital collection. I'm sure with your interest in the Civil War, the digital collection. Again, it's at wisconsinhistory.org. www.ukrainian.org/civil war.
Right.
There you go. And you put in your relatives' names, type them in, and you're going to, if there's anything there among those, what, 10,000 pieces or whatever, it's you'll find it.
You almost always find something.
Thanks again for calling, Barbara. Jim in Madison, turn to you next. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I've been interested for a long time in the changing perception of why the Civil War was fought. I think more recently there has been the emphasis on ending slavery. And yet when the Lincoln Memorial was built, it was a dedication to the Union first. It has become a civil rights icon now. But I wondered if in the letters, and there have been other books written about letters home, whether the Wisconsin, why were the Wisconsin soldiers fighting this war?
Mm-hmm. Great question, Jim. You can see it in the letters, and you can see it even better in the diaries that we've put online, because going day by day, you see them, those who reflected on their motives changing as they experienced the war. Certainly when the war broke out, most of the soldiers who volunteered didn't care much one way or another about slavery. There was an abolitionist cause, a movement in Wisconsin, and it was very vocal, but most of the soldiers who volunteered had never seen a black person, really didn't care very much. They were going to fight in the summer of 61 and the fall of 61. They were going to fight to preserve the Union. This was, at the time, the only country on the face of the planet where people got to choose their own rulers. And we had been experimenting with that for less than 100 years when the South seceded and attacked Washington. And it was to protect that experiment in democracy that motivated the first wave of volunteers. But then as you follow them south and they begin to see slavery close up, many of them are just appalled. And they become motivated to right this wrong. They see how slavery and the repression of the African-American population in the South just flew in the face of those 18th century democratic principles that they had enlisted to protect. So by 62 and certainly into 63, the majority of the letters and diaries are commenting on the need to end slavery in order to fulfill the American dream. But it's a gradual transition, and you can see it unfold in the letters.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Mark in Waukesha, your turn. Hello.
Hi. The reason I'm calling is my great-grandfather spent time in or was captured in Ohio and spent time in Camp Chase prison and also in Johnson Island prison, where we have some of his letters that he wrote to his cousin, who was actually his girlfriend at the time. And what was kind of interesting, especially in Johnson's Island, he commented on how cold it was there, especially during the winter and the like. And I guess my two questions preserve on, do historical societies in the states, you know, like Ohio or Tennessee, where his company was from, have interest in those letters? And how do you preserve those types of letters if you have Civil War letters?
The first question is easy to answer. Most historical societies at the state level have so many thousands of Civil War letters, they're not really interested in collecting more unless they document something unusual. So a good home, if you come across Civil War letters, is a local historical society where that person was from, because then you know that they'll be exhibited or used with visiting school children and have more meaning. So they're not rare, and I would suggest that the Tennessee and the Ohio Historical Societies would probably tell you, gee, you know, unless he was an eyewitness to Lincoln's assassination, we don't really need to add them. Preserving them is an easy question to answer. Generally, the great enemies of paper are light and humidity, especially fluctuations in them. So keep them out of the light, and don't put them in the basement or the attic where the humidity is going to go up and down, and use acid-free materials to store them.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
We finally have some open lines again, so you can get on with your question or comment or experience at 1-800-642-1234. Michael Edmonds of the Wisconsin Historical Society talking about the book that he wrote a foreword to. It's called This Wicked Rebellion. And Jacques in Kenosha, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for accepting my call. My dad was a huge Civil War buff. He collected hundreds of books and artifacts and bullets and whatever he can get his hands on. And he always went to rummage sales and this, that, and the other thing. And we may have in our family possession, and I'm not sure, he told me before he passed away 12, 14 years ago, that that book may be the third book of the signing at Appomattox. I have no clue whatsoever, and it's been sitting in the closet. And when I was listening to your conversation, it was like, oh, yeah, we got that. So it was like, any insight on anything like that or who I could take it to? Or?
Well, you couldn't be in a better place, Jacques, because the state's best museum on Civil War history is there in Kenosha, the Civil War Museum. And I'm sure that my colleagues there could take a look at what you have and give you sound advice about it.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever been there, but...
yeah, I have. My dad was friends with, I want to say the guy's name was Lee off the top of my head, but I can't remember who the person was down here either, so...
Well, I think you could call him up, make an appointment to go in at a time when there's a curator or an archivist there and show it to them and ask, is this what it appears to be?
Yeah.
If you don't find someone there who can help you, of course, we can do that at the Historical Society in Madison, as could the State Veterans Museum here in Madison.
Okay.
They're superb on the Civil War.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Jacques.
Thank you for the info.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. We have a Facebook question from Timothy. Any letters in the book from the members of the Iron Brigade concerning the cornfield at the Battle of Antietam? Certainly there's, I'm pretty sure there's an Antietam, there are Antietam letters. I may be wrong.
Checking the index, there are several letters from Antietam.
Yeah.
I don't know, the index doesn't identify what regiment they're from. But I think if you went to the digital collection and clicked on the page about Antietam to see original documents, you'd find there are probably 500 or 600 pages of original documents, and then you could filter those down to get at what you want.
Yeah.
So the information's available even if it's not in the book.
So WisconsinHistory.org/Civil War.
Right.
Go right there and give it a shot. We have Margaret in Madison. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I'm listening, and my grandfather, Albert Clark Morse, was in the Iron Brigade for 4 years. Oh, gosh, I'm coming over the radio.
Oh, yeah, you have your radio turned up. Oh, that's
I don't want to listen to myself. Anyway, his letters are very interesting, and they're at the Historical Society, I know.
Uh-huh.
And so, that's great. And so those letters, Margaret, would also, because they were at the Historical Society, those letters would also be up online, I would guess.
Probably.
Almost for sure.
It's good that you or your parents or your grandfather had the foresight to preserve those letters and get them to us long ago.
I believe they all went eventually to Madison, to the Civil War Museum.
Oh, so.
I think they're there. And he had graduated from what was called the Taft and something. So he had a very nice hand.
Very nice hand, and probably another one of those really good writers that... I think for, among other things about this book, the thing that I really like is how you are. It's almost like you're sitting there listening. The person is almost talking out loud to you. I mean, it's the writing style is so captivating.
It's certainly easy to imagine that you're sitting around the Cracker Barrel at the general store in Waukesha,
yeah,
you know, while the letter's being read out loud.
Right, yeah,
after it's received, it's very immediate.
Very, very immediate. That it'd be a great book on tape. Margaret, I thank you again for calling. I appreciate it. Caller Don wondered why they did so much drilling, but not a lot of real battle practice. And I think the drilling probably, well, for one thing, you wanted them ready, and you wanted them to be able to you could do things with almost without thinking. You were ordered to do something and you did it. And if you drilled enough, it was drilled into your head and into your body.
That's right. And very few of the Wisconsin soldiers who volunteered had any previous military training. Most of them were total raw recruits. So they drilled and they drilled and they drilled and they drilled.
Yeah, and it also kept them, gave them something to do, to be perfectly honest, because there was an awful lot of sitting around anyway.
That's right.
David in New Auburn, hello. David, are you there? Let's try Robert in West Salem then. Robert, hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I enjoyed your discussion, and like Dick Cheney, I had better things to do during the Vietnam War, and I had felt that sometimes wars credited people for the wrong reasons or something, and I wrote my master's thesis on trying to prove that Jeremiah Rusk didn't deserve to be a congressman and didn't deserve for going from governor to congressman to secretary of agriculture, so that I was going to explore his military service. As a result, I followed the Company B of the 25th Regiment out of Viroqua and up into La Crosse and down into Madison, out of Camp Randall and down the river and on to Vicksburg, and then eventually their march to sea with Sherman. And I learned that on the way, his original colonel was not a very stable person, and Governor Rusk had to fill in quite a bit. And towards the end, when they were doing some mopping up in the Carolinas, he was one that would grab the flag and charge a bridge or charge a barn. And his soldiers wrote time and time again that they thought he was going to get him killed.
So your notion of him changed a little bit through your research.
Boy, I tell you, I had to go back to my committee and say, you know, my hypothesis is not going to be proven. No matter where I found him, he was a guy that, I guess, in one instance, they could not get anybody to charge the bridge, and even his soldiers were cowering back, and he rode his horse right by one of the other commanders and grabbed the flag from the flag holder and charged with his horse and his flag and his sword. Now, I don't know how he handled the horse, but quite a story.
Oh, that's a great story, Robert. Comment, Michael?
Well, he was always reputed afterwards to be a real down-home kind of no-nonsense guy. So you can imagine him just charging ahead on his own.
That's a great story. Thank you, Robert. That's a wonderful story. Appreciate it very much. Ed in Merrill, thank you for writing, for calling. Hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was just through the Chickamauga battlefield recently and did some research, and they started talking about the Henrys and Spencer rifles that were reloaders instead of the muskets. And I was wondering if anyone rode home, because the Union soldiers would have to buy their own. They were not standard military issue. And so I was wondering if anyone rode home, they considered it their life insurance policy by buying one. If anyone had any, there's any anecdotes about someone saying, don't worry about me, I got my Henry or I've got my Spencer.
Yeah.
In the book, there are a few letters about Belgian rifles, but I think those were the old muzzle loading kind of muskets you're talking about. No mentions in the index there about the other kinds you mentioned. There are, in the online collection, lots of discussions about the weapons, and of course they were always trying to pick up anywhere they could a better gun than they were carrying. We tagged all of those, so you can search the online site for more information about that, Don.
I'm remembering reading one of the letters in the book, The Wicked Rebellion, where the guy had fired, he was writing about firing so many times, his gun was so dirty, got to be so dirty, that in order to plunge the material down the barrel, he would have to rack it against a tree and jam it against a tree to jam the load in.
Yeah, certainly when the war started, the Union troops were not well equipped. the Wisconsin troops, in any event, were not well equipped, and that improved as things went on. But there are lots of mention in these letters about problems with their weapons or their uniforms, their clothing quality.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when the rebels would capture one of those, they could only use it for a short time because they didn't have the ammo for that. So they referred to them, I guess, as the gun the Yanks would load on Sunday and shoot all week.
Ed, thank you very much. I want to give Don and Tomahawk's been waiting a little while, and right here as we get near the end, I want to give him a chance. Hi, thank you very much for calling, Don.
Hi, Larry. Really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Just a few comments. Not too long ago, I had the opportunity to visit Shiloh on the Tennessee River, the big Shiloh battlefield.
Yeah.
Very humbling experience. The thing that impressed me most was the fact that there's a large monument to the Union soldiers that fell, and there's nothing to commemorate the Confederates because of the fact that, you know, they had seceded from the Union, and that's a big bone of contention among the Tennessee people down there. So it was a very interesting battle, the Bloody Pond down there, and the old Methodist Church, the Shiloh Meeting House. Mm-hmm. But the fact that so many on both sides fell and got killed.
Right.
I
remember reading, Don, that more soldiers died in 20 minutes at Shiloh than had died in all American wars up till then. It
wow.
shocked everyone. You know, Bull Run shocked people who thought the war was going to be over in 3 weeks. And then the next spring, Shiloh shocked everyone who realized that the military technology made it possible to kill vastly more people than had ever been true before. It was a real eye-opener.
Yeah. And certainly there are letters from Shiloh in the Wicked Rebellion book.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes.
For sure. Yeah. Don, I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Michael Edmonds, thank you. This has been a wonderful 45 minutes. I've really enjoyed talking with you. I love the book, The Wicked Rebellion. It's certainly a fascinating read. And it was also fun to talk about that digital collection. And so people, I'll tell you, if you're interested in the Civil War and Wisconsin relating to it, I hope you'll go to wisconsinhistory.org/Civil War. That same site is up on my Facebook page, so you can get there too. Get there that way. Just click on the link. Michael, hope we have a chance to do it again. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Really appreciate it very much. So much to learn about the Civil War and Wisconsin's role, and we're so fortunate to have folks like Michael Edmonds, frankly, and the resources of the Wisconsin Historical Society to teach us and pique our interest. Coming up, we're going to talk about a resource that we here in the upper Midwest are lucky to have readily available, maple syrup. And you might be surprised to find that there's actually a tie to that Civil War topic we just finished. I mentioned it a little earlier, but we'll get more details on that next. It's coming up here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.